Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Kids Ministry 101 podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Peters, and we are excited today to have a really special guest in Mr. Dave Thomas. Dave, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We are recording at the Etch Family Ministry Conference. At the time that we were recording this, it is October, and it is early in the morning on this day here at the Etch Conference. People are beginning to arrive, and they are setting up a biscuit bar for breakfast. Have you heard about the biscuit bar?
You've just made my day.
See, well, so
tell
over
me more.
There, if you just look that direction, Dave, you'll see all these little tables and hot plates and things. They're bringing out, I don't know what's on a biscuit bar, but we need to find out.
You have changed the course of my entire day with that news. Thank you.
So if we seem a little distracted, listeners, it may be because those biscuits are calling our name. And as the smells begin to waft this direction. So the only way that you can experience the biscuit bar is if you come to the Etch Conference. So we would invite you, if you're not here this year, to please come next year. We will be here in October at the Music City Center. And it's a lot of great fun, great opportunity to network with others who are in preschool, kids, and student ministry. And even more importantly, to rub elbows with thought leaders and influencers in ministry and in the ministry space, like our friend David Thomas. And so we are so thrilled to have you today. For those of you who don't know Dave, David Thomas, LMSW. Can you help me with that little acronym one more time?
Those crazy letters. Licensed Master's Level Social Worker.
Okay, great. See, thank you for bringing
that
clarity. Licensed Master's Level Social Worker. He's the director of family counseling at Daystar Counseling. You can find that at daystarcounseling.com. He's here in Nashville, Tennessee, local. The co-author of 6 different books, including the best-selling Wild Things, The Art of Nurturing Boys. That sounds like a good one. I have 2 boys. It's not that they're wild, but boys just by nature have a different level of energy.
They absolutely do. There's some different hardwiring there.
Different game to parent boys. So that's by Tyndale House. He's a frequent guest on national television and radio programs. He's been featured in publications like USA Today. He speaks across the country. Let me get this. His book, Wild Things, Intentional Parenting, and the brand new book, Are My Kids on Track? The 12 emotional, social, and spiritual milestones that your child needs to reach are all currently available. So that brand new book, tell me about that real quick.
Thank you for asking. That's what I'm going to have an opportunity to talk about today. I'm going to be talking some about kids and emotions. So I'm going to be running through the 4 emotional milestones. And my dear friend and colleague at Daystar, Sissy Goff, who I believe is going to be a guest of yours today, is going to be talking about the 4 social milestones. So we're hopefully going to cover a lot of territory. And a part of why this book felt really important to us is, you know, we talk a lot about how there is a very clear context to track with our kids' physical growth. You know, every time we step into the pediatrician's office, whether it's for a sick or a well visit, we're getting asked questions. And that really starts really at birth. It's, you know, if your first encounter, if you're a biological parent was in the hospital, a pediatrician even came to see you there and started asking questions. Well, those first questions are really only about 2 things, pooping and eating.
Like,
is food coming in? Is food going out?
But
at whatever intersection, if you're an adoptive parent, when that first well visit started, we began tracking closely with their physical growth.
Yes.
Are they making eye contact?
And there weight, it is. In percentiles of where do they fall.
And then once they jump into the school environment, we're tracking really closely with their cognitive development, and we can measure IQ. We can, you know, we have tools to measure, for example, a child's reading ability. Are they reading on a 4th grade level, 3rd month, 2nd week? Like, we can pinpoint it to that place, but there is really not a context where we're tracking, asking those kind of questions in terms of their emotional, social, and spiritual development.
Yeah.
And I think you and I would agree, those are 3 of the most important threads of their development.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the place they're going to operate from right now as brothers and sisters and friends and daughters and sons, and then eventually someday as co-workers, as husbands, as wives, as parents themselves. And so these threads of their development feel so important to pay attention to. And we wanted to create some questions parents could be asking there that we could start to track and find evidence that they're progressing toward these really important milestones as well.
Yeah. Those emotional milestones. Wow, fascinating. So that book is Are My Kids on Track? The 12 Emotional, Social, and Spiritual Milestones That Your Child Needs to Reach. So make sure to look for that book. And boy, I'm excited to dive into our topic today. We are going to be talking about kids and emotions. But first, we do this little thing on the podcast where we want to find out a little bit about little you. And okay. So when you were younger, were you a collector of anything? Did you collect anything when you were a kid?
I collected Matchbox cars.
Oh, I did too.
Did you really?
I did. I've still got a whole bunch that my boys play with
now.
I do
too.
So, okay, tell me about your collection.
Oh, I loved it. I had the big Hot Wheels tire.
Oh, that round one. It's like a case that closes up. Yeah.
Carried it everywhere. Took it on vacation. I was rarely without it. And I would create these expansive racetracks all over my house and in my closet. I mean, in any given moment, a person in my house could step on, trip on, fall down from a Hot Wheels car because it was such a fascination for me.
Now, were you more of a Hot Wheels guy or a Matchbox guy? Because, I mean, I've got
both.
That's
a great question.
You know,
I had both
as well.
There's
some distinctions.
You're exactly right. I was probably a little more of a Hot Wheels guy, but I, too, had both. And I don't think they make them like they used to.
No, they just don't. And that's true of so many things. But the Matchbox Hot Wheels, it was like every Easter basket, every Christmas, every birthday, I was looking for that next car.
Yes.
I remember that.
And I remember, this will date me. I mean, I remember when they were 99 cents.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I might remember that too.
99 cents.
Now, did you have a favorite? Was there any particular car that you, or?
I don't know that I had a favorite. I mean, I certainly would. Been toward. I mean, I think at a really young age, I had the utility vehicles, you know, the fire engine and the police car and all those things. But I certainly, like a lot of boys, was drawn
to
the race cars.
Utility ones. I love the race cars.
I did too.
Yeah, that was my calling.
Man, you're making me wish we had them right
here.
We just
set
up
a track. Maybe next year. That's a good thing for Etch Conference next year.
You and I will lead that out.
Giant Hot Wheel race off. All right, I love it. It'd be like the. Like the Pinewood Derby, but with Hot Wheels cars. They would go so far in the Music City Center.
Yes. The only other collection for me, I'm curious to know if this was your world too, was when I was 7 years old, the very first Star Wars movie came out.
And you had some
action
figures.
And I was captivated and had a lot. I had a case with a lot of action figures. So those were two great loves.
And do you still have those?
Oh, I do.
Those are probably getting valuable.
They are. And it's been so fun, obviously, as the saga has continued, that I could experience that with my own sons.
Yes.
And to go back.
Oh,
and
so fun.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit, when the first new release came out and I took my boys, like to have that experience where they were about my age, taking them to the theater in the same way my dad did, like I was so emotional. Like I was really teary. It was such a experience that kind of linked my boyhood to my fatherhood in a remarkable way.
How great. How fun that we can have toys and things like that connect us back with our kids.
I know.
And it is fun.
Well, and the smell of these biscuits is about to take me back to my boyhood, too.
Well, we better get to our topic then so that we can finish up and eat some biscuits. So we're talking kids and emotions. So according to statistics, this current generation, we are the most addicted, most in debt, most depressed, most obese population in U.S. history. Those are not good, positive statistics.
It's disheartening, isn't it?
So we go to all these lengths to avoid and to deny and to self-medicate and to suppress our feelings and our hurts and to hide. And so we have a country full of adults who never learned how to navigate in a way that's emotionally healthy.
Yes.
And yet we now find ourselves as the adults. We're bringing up children. We're leading in ministry, or we are parenting at home. And we're not that well equipped, I would say, to really lead in a way that provides emotional health. So
I agree.
Where do we begin? In light of that circumstance, where do we start?
Well, it's a part of where, and I mean this genuinely, I'm so grateful you all would invite me to come into this space and to talk with these leaders in this way, that I think there is such opportunity in my mind for us as a church to lead this movement in raising up a generation of kids who are emotionally, socially, and spiritually more healthy than what the data, as you just shared, is telling us right now. And so it thrills me that we could be having a conversation about kids and emotions in this space and to think about how many leaders are going to lead this space. And I hope really carry that forward as they're caring for kids and adolescents in their communities, because I think it's got to start with us. I really do. And I talk about in the book, and I'm going to talk this morning about the reality of, you know, there is very clear evidence all throughout Scripture of where Jesus in his humanity felt so many things. I'm going to remind folks of the passage where Jesus encounters Mary and Mary after losing their brother.
Yes.
And I love the truth of that Scripture in John, and where it talks about, you know, when he encountered Mary and she is weeping and saying to him, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. And
yes.
It said, the Scripture says, the NIV translates that to say, he was deeply moved and troubled. And then we're told, you know, a few verses down, he wept in her presence. I mean, it's a clear example of a man in his humanity who had all these different emotions he was experiencing, who practiced empathy in the company of this friend that he loved and cared deeply for. And so we're made as image bearers. And so we're made as emotional beings, and we got to figure out what to do with it. And I love where you led that question, because I think unless we figure that out for ourselves, we really, I think in every area, we can only take kids as far as we've gone ourselves. So if you don't have a clear sense as an adult of understanding what you feel and then what to do with that constructively, then it never surprises me that the statistics are what they are and that we're just kind of all increasing those numbers because we don't have a sense of what that looks like.
So we need to raise awareness, our own awareness, of the reality of the situation, that there's an issue that needs to be addressed, and that we are lacking in our ability to address that.
Yes.
So what kind of next steps might we take?
Well, one of the things that we do in the book that I love talking with educators and with parents about is we talk about what are some of the unique stumbling blocks, and you get this so well as a father of two girls and a father of two boys, that what are some of the stumbling blocks that are unique to girls to developing in these areas? Mm. What are some of those with boys? And then we move toward what are some of the building blocks that we want to help the girls that we love kind of progress toward? And then we, at the end of every chapter, put in 10 really easy, user-friendly, practical ideas, things you can do every day in your home that don't require more props or a lot of even time to kind of think through what does that need to look like, but just a sense of how could we be folding these practices more into the rhythm of what we're already doing as families. So I think it starts there. Mm. And we even introduce like the importance of something as simple as printing off Pinterest or finding online somewhere just a basic feelings chart, like, and put it on the refrigerator. Like, are we referencing that with frequency so that the kids we love are developing an emotional vocabulary? Something as simple as that feels so profoundly important. In fact, I have a friend here in Nashville who runs a treatment center for adult professional men. So primarily doctors, lawyers, CEOs, pastors, heads of organizations, highly successful men who have landed in addiction in some way and who have to step out of life and move toward treatment. And he said, David, the very first day they're there, we do group. And we sit in a circle, and I put 8 feelings on the floor. And he said, you'd be shocked how many Harvard-educated doctors, how many pastors leading mega churches cannot answer the question, what are you feeling about being here?
Wow.
There it is, and that's where it starts. They have no emotional vocabulary. So any emotion that registers inside, they're just trying to figure out, how do I numb that out? How do I shut that down? How do I make that stop? Yeah. So it explains the statistics.
It's unbelievable, and yet it's so believable.
Very believable.
Very. Now, you talk about 3 different emotional milestones that are important for kids. Can you talk us through those milestones?
I will. I'd be glad to. The first one is vocabulary, which is as simple as what we just discussed. The second one I'm going to talk about today is a practice that we call resourcefulness. And it's really, we call it kind of the two-part magic equation of emotional development. So vocabulary is figuring out what do I feel, and resourcefulness is figuring out what to do with it. How can I take the emotion to something constructive? And then the third one I'm going to discuss is empathy, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, which empathy is this practice. In fact, I like to say it's like a muscle that is more developed in some people and less developed in others, but it's a muscle we can work that gets stronger. And empathy is this muscle that all the research continues to tell us time and time again is a foundational ingredient in healthy relationships, whether that's healthy marriages, healthy parent to child, healthy coworkers, any relationship. We continue to, the research reminds us that empathy is a foundational building block. And unless that's there, the relationship's going to go off the rails at some point. If I don't have the capacity to read the emotions you're experiencing, to step into your experience, to really move toward understanding and awareness that you were talking about earlier. So I'm going to circle around those 3 and, again, some really practical ways we can help the kids we love develop.
And so great strategy there for parenting, but also in ministry as we lead kids and students and younger kids. If we can come alongside and help them put words to their feelings as they're experiencing something, have empathy for what it is that they're going through. We know that discipleship happens best in the context of relationship. And
You're so right.
We need to be there relationally for kids rather than just impart knowledge to them, right? We need to come alongside and walk with them.
I'm going to talk today about how kids learn more from observation than information. So the best way for them to develop in these areas is to see it on the grown-ups around them.
Well, okay, so speaking of those grown-ups around them, are there some practical things we can do to help nurture emotionally healthy children? Are there some pitfalls that we maybe should avoid, or things that we're doing that may be a hindrance to that we're unaware of?
Yes. I would say one that I think is really natural is, you know, for example, I talk with a lot of parents of young boys who will talk about them having these epic meltdowns, which boys are prone to, and without realizing what we're doing, a lot of times we'll say things like, stop crying, stop getting so upset. And what we're basically saying when you break it all down is stop feeling, like stop having feelings. And so I would throw out those phrases.
Good.
And that's where I'd throw that feelings chart up on the refrigerator, and in those moments ask, like, I can tell you're feeling a lot. I'm looking at your face. I'm reading your body. I can tell you're feeling a lot. Let's see if we can figure out what that is. And then let's see what we can figure out what to do with it. And I coach parents and I coach educators, and I think this is a great practice in churches as well, to carve out some space in the room where kids can go when they're feeling something deeply and work that through. So if they just need to exit circle time for a couple minutes and go over to the side and scream into a pillow or sit on a bouncy ball, jump on a mini trampoline. I mean, there's these tools that we can put in those spaces that really allow kids to take, boys particularly, some of the physicality, the emotion, to something constructive. But I think girls can benefit from that as well. Like, do we have journals and crayons and colors and things where they could draw or paint? But again, that practice from early on of, I'm feeling something, what do I do with it? How can I take it to something healthy? As opposed to the people around me saying, stop doing that, stop feeling. And then I'm learning the practice of trying to shut that down.
So we don't want to suppress it. We don't want to deny it. And we need to encourage kids to talk through some of those feelings.
And that sounds so simple, but it's honestly not happening day to day.
And it doesn't come naturally.
It doesn't.
Because we suppress our own feelings, right? Sure. We tell ourselves, don't cry about this, or don't be angry, or don't be whatever, don't feel.
Sure.
Yeah.
So thanks for letting me talk about that.
Well, we so appreciate you. David Thomas, again, the new book is Are My Kids On Track? The 12 Emotional, Social, and Spiritual Milestones That Your Child Needs to Reach. And can you tell us where that book is available?
It is actually available anywhere you buy books. You can get it online at Amazon. It's available in all major bookstores. And you can go to our website, raisingboysandgirls.com, and it'll link you to that and other resources that we have.
Excellent. Thank you so very much.
Thanks
we appreciate
for having
you
me.
Here. And listeners, thank you. We appreciate you. And we just thank you for listening again. And our hope is always that the content we share would inform, instruct, and inspire you as you lead the kids and families that God's entrusted to you in your ministry. And we want to be your encourager. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Kids Ministry 101 podcast.